Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Grey Lady of Wilmer by M. L. Bullock, narrated by Cody Roberts and Emily Lawrence. Chapter 1. Hugh Gallagher.
Man, that's good music. Real good music. They just don't make music like that anymore. Take my word for it. They don't make music like that anymore. Now they got this screaming pop crap that I can't understand. You know what I mean, don't you?
Hugh twisted the large wheel and shifted the vehicle ever so slightly into the right lane to accommodate the latest in a long streak of wannabe hot rod drivers. Damn speeders. Where were the cops? He regularly spotted the blue light boys when he drove this section of Highway 98 during the daylight hours.
I guess they all hang out at the donut shop after the sun goes down, because there isn't one to be seen now. Figures. These little bastards aren't getting so much as a ticket. But let this trucker get a heavy foot for a few minutes, just to make up time, and I'd rack up the charges.
He imagined hearing his wife's nagging voice in his ear.
Remember your heart, Hugh. Let it all roll off of you like water off a duck's back. You can't afford to have another heart attack.
Yes, dear, he said with a snark, although there was no one with him in the cab of his truck,
except for the stuffed dinosaur on the seat beside him. Hugh sang aloud with Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. This was one of his favorite songs, Turn the Page. He'd been driving on a long and lonesome highway, too, although he was nowhere near Omaha. He was about 25 minutes from Mobile, Alabama. That was this load's destination. Highway 98 didn't offer much to see. Nothing to look at except some older homes in between long stretches of boring road. And not good road either. This highway had more potholes than Carter had liver pills. No hills, no mountains. There was a small lake, but the bridge wasn't elevated. And again, there wasn't much in the way of scenery.
When you're riding 16 hours and there's nothing much to do, and you don't feel much like riding, you just wish the trip was through.
Yeah, he was feeling this song even though his life was pretty steady except for the occasional heart attack. He didn't have much to complain about. Hugh loved his wife, enjoyed being home. He would retire in a few months, and it had been a long time coming. A long time coming. Yep, he thought as he glanced at the toy again. Everything was right on schedule despite that flat tire outside New Orleans. He would keep himself busy and active. He could do that. As the four lane became a two lane, he geared down and slowed his speed a bit. This section of Bloody 98, well, that was the name the truckers gave this dangerous roadway, was a speed trap. Hugh knew this section all too well. As the song's chorus kicked in, he continued to sing to the stuffed dinosaur beside him. Hugh wasn't sure why he brought the thing with him. He guessed it was because deep down, despite his reservations in regards to his son's partner, Hugh was genuinely excited about becoming a grandfather. He'd been waiting for years for his son John to find the right girl, to get married and settle down. Hopefully close to his old man, but that's not how this went down. John met a girl all right, but she was no winner. She was an ex-dancer with a bad attitude. John knew Hugh's attitude about family and life. Things should be done in a certain order, but his son was always screwing up. At least he had his degree. At least there was that. And now he would be a father, and Hugh a grandfather. The girl, that's how he thought of Luna, was not smart or nice or all that pretty, but she would be the mother of his grandson. Hugh didn't care for her one bit, but there wasn't much he could do about it. now that Hugh's wife had stopped crying over the situation. She seemed pretty excited about it, too. Luna was far enough along for them to find out the sex of the baby. That kind of ticked Hugh off, that John kept this kind of a secret from him for so long. 5 months pregnant. Just a few more months, and he'd meet his grandson. Maybe, pending the DNA test. He insisted that John get one, but who knew if his boy would go through with it? Nope. Hugh didn't trust Luna at all. Weren't dancers notorious for being easy? Rain tapped on the big windshield of his semi-truck. Hugh sighed at the sight of it. His wipers needed to be changed. If a hard rain came, he'd have to slow down, and he was so close to home. So close he could almost taste the meatloaf. Despite her preaching about his heart, Edie always served him his favorite meals for a long haul. Sometimes meatloaf, sometimes fried pork chops or chicken. Meatloaf had been his choice for tonight's dinner. Just thinking about her tasty food made his mouth water. Why had he skipped lunch? He felt as if he were about to starve to death. That's about the time he saw the woman on the side of the road. What caught his attention wasn't that she was there, since sometimes people walked along this particular section of Highway 98. There were lots of campers in those woods, and it was notorious for drug activity. That wasn't it. She didn't appear to be a drug head or a camper, and certainly not a homeless person. The woman's clothing was all wrong. She reminded Hugh of the late Jackie Kennedy with her pillbox hat, fitted dress suit, and boxy purse. And what was weirder was none of her clothing had any color to it. Neither did her skin or hair. That gave him the shivers. He blinked his eyes as he drove past her. Was he suddenly colorblind? Hugh stared in the side mirror as he jetted past her. What in the hell? Was he having a heart attack? Was he going blind? Everything around the woman looked perfect, as far as color went, from what he could see in his headlights. No, he could see colors, but not with her. Hugh saw the bright green road sign and the litter on the side of the road. Everything appeared normal except for her. She staggered along, one heel missing from her shoe. He couldn't be sure, but it looked like there was a large spot on the back of her dress, up at the left shoulder, like she'd fallen in the mud. Gray mud. She wasn't normal at all. She was a blur, and then she was gone. The rain began to pour, and to Hugh's surprise, his fuel light came on with a long bing. He put the odd gray woman out of his mind and turned his attention to his rig. It was, after all, his retirement plan. It was fairly new and in good shape, and he already had a buyer interested in paying good money for it. That would pad the nest egg nicely. Hugh and Edie wouldn't have to worry about money for a while. The fuel light flashed again and offered up another bing. Shoot! How had that happened? He topped off the tank when he came through Hattiesburg. There should be plenty of fuel for the ride home and then some. Well, he couldn't take any chances. Hugh needed to check this out, make sure there wasn't a fuel leak or something crazy like that. Yeah, this was all he needed. How to account for all that missing fuel? No, it had to be a sensor. He'd filled it up not 2 hours ago. Hugh eased the big rig into Smokey's gas station. It was a pretty busy place, so he had to be careful about finding a place to stop. After a minute or two, he eased the truck off to the right of the building and headed out to make sure he wasn't leaking gas. He didn't smell any, and that was a good thing. With some effort, he knelt to get a better look at the undercarriage of his semi. He clicked the button on the flashlight as the rain began to fall heavier. Not a trace or odor of gasoline. Nothing to tell him that the sensor was delivering a true and accurate warning. Damn computer chips. As he struggled to get back on his feet, Hugh heard footsteps on the pavement behind him. Distinctive footsteps, too, like high heels clicking along a hardwood floor. But that couldn't be right. Hugh waved the flashlight behind him, but there wasn't a soul. Some kids at the gas pumps. The parking lot along either side of the convenience store was full. But there was no one out here, not even other truckers. Like him, they preferred the cheaper gas in Mississippi, as here in Alabama the gas prices were wild, which made no sense as there were many rigs off the Alabama coastline. No sense at all.
Hello?
Hugh wiped the rain from his face as he managed to stand upright. There was no one, not a soul. A rolling jukebox sped by him, and he decided to wrap up his search. He'd drop this load and head home. Yeah, that was the plan. Man, all this driving was rough on his old body. His knees and shoulders ached, evidence of his arthritis. His eyes burned from lack of sleep. He was ready for this to be over with. Unfortunately, there was no way for him to turn off the sensor, so he'd have to listen to it beep all the way home. Hugh silently prayed that there was nothing truly wrong with his truck.
Please let it be a sensor. Just a sensor.
Hugh eased onto the step and put the flashlight behind his seat. Getting in and out of this monster was always a trick. His joints were seizing up on him and they cracked and snapped. He was glad no one could hear them. It sounded as if he were walking on packing peanuts. The rain continued to splatter the windshield, and he mused over the idea of texting his wife. No, no sense in doing that. He was almost on schedule. Almost. With a grin, he reached for the door to close it and glanced over at the stuffed dinosaur. But it wasn't there. Wait. It was there. The gray lady held it. The one Hugh had seen stumbling down the road. What in the hell was he looking at? How had she gotten in here? She clutched the toy like a child who had found a treasure. Her purse was on her arm, her pillbox hat askew on her head. He watched in horror as the gray lady began to speak. Oh, God! She was talking to him. Only her mouth wasn't moving. He could hear her voice, but inside his head, not with his ears. Take me home. He keeps us here. Take me home. Hugh responded with a yelp of surprise, and as he reached for the door, he realized he was falling. Falling and landing. And everything went black.
Chapter 2. Cassidy. Last night's nightmare lingered in my memory as I poked around the refrigerator in search of breakfast. I had been traveling between my place and my boyfriend's, make that my fiancé's, apartment far too much lately. My cat, Domino, gave me the stink eye as he came to remind me that his litter box needed attention. I know, I know. I closed the refrigerator and squatted down to pet him. He purred and rubbed my leg as his black, furry body arched. I took that as an invitation to love on him, but instead of giving me fuzzy cat snuggles, he bit me. It didn't hurt, but it surprised the heck out of me. Hey! Cut that out, Domino! I get the message. Jeesh, buddy. He turned his nose up as he stalked out of the kitchen. He flicked his tail at me and gave me one last dirty look before leaving me alone. Well, he was right. He'd be alone every night this week. Sorry, I called after him, but he didn't come back. I took care of his business and refreshed his water and food. Still no sign of him. Man, He must be really ticked off. Normally, Domino came running when I shook his kitty food canister. Oh well, no time to make nice with my temperamental cat. I needed to take care of this empty fridge situation. I wasn't up to making a trip to the grocery store, so I decided to go online and order my groceries from the grocery store's website. This new way of doing grocery shopping was right up my alley. I had never been much of a people person, although, until the past few years, I would have not identified myself as an introvert. But the more I stepped into my new paranormal life, I realized how important it was to monitor who I spent time with. My gift was growing, and as I became better at painting ghosts, I also became more sensitive to that realm. It was hard to explain, but I treasured my private time nowadays. I didn't get much of it, since Midas and I spent so much time together. Not that I was complaining. Midas Demopolis was wonderful, a good guy through and through, but I missed my snippets of isolation. I needed the quiet time for painting and sketching and working my art. He certainly supported what I did. Midas surprised me with a brand new tablet, complete with stylus and swanky drawing software that would allow me to work my medium in a new format. I was excited at first, but as I began learning how to use the software, I realized it wasn't quite the same. I couldn't connect with the pigments, couldn't touch the paint. There was no real spiritual connection for me, and I needed that to see. Sure, I could create amazing graphics with this nifty software, but for my true purpose, the tablet wasn't going to do me a bit of good. If I was going to tap into the other side, I was going to have to get my hands dirty. No doubt it would prove handy to have the tablet around to record any ideas that popped into my head, but I couldn't make a connection on a supernatural level with Midas's sweet gift. Nope. Gonna have to get dirty. I knew pink would be a part of this color study. Definitely pink, and not the modern pink. A more faded pink. Softer. And gray. Lots of grays. After my shopping was complete, I called my cat again. But he wanted nothing to do with me. It was always like this when he had a bone to pick with me. What normally happened was he'd forget about being ticked off and come curl up with me on the couch. But it had to be his idea. Nobody forced Domino to do anything he didn't want to do. Domino had always had a bit of a wild streak, a streak made worse when I didn't spend time with him every day. Gosh, I was so bad at caring for my cat that I had genuine concerns about how I would be at parenting. No doubt Midas would be a good parent. He had that whole protector thing going on, a trait one wants in a father. In a few months, I would be Mrs. Cassidy Demopolis. I knew my life was going to change, but I couldn't wrap my head around it. Midas and I checked out multiple venues for the reception. The wedding would be at his family's church. It was a lovely old place in downtown Mobile, very gothic looking, but traditional. I didn't want to disappoint the entire Demopolis clan, so I didn't make a fuss about it. I loved his family and wanted to connect with all of them. That didn't make any of this easier, though. There was too much to do for the two of us. I asked Sierra to help me. Not that she didn't have enough to do in her own busy life. But I was at a loss. I had no family whatsoever, no sister or mother to share this experience with. Sierra was the closest friend I had, besides Midas. She happily agreed to help me, and I cried with relief right on the phone. After a lengthy conversation, I felt better about it all. Sierra wasn't normally the first one to offer a hug, but when she did, you knew it was genuine. Our phone conversation felt like a nice hug. Midas wanted to go house hunting on top of the wedding planning, but I had to put my size 6 down on that one. I reminded him that we had our whole lives together and plenty of time to make these decisions. What's the rush, sweetheart? Please, let me enjoy our wedding and honeymoon before we plan a house purchase and a move. He agreed with me and was down with slowing down the process, We even had an amazing, intimate encounter afterward. But I still felt unsettled. He was so happy about our wedding that I couldn't share with him what was really on my heart. I wanted this to be a joyful occasion for both of us. But I was definitely in the mully grubs. The fact was, and I couldn't for the life of me understand why he couldn't see this without me telling him, we were going to get married in a packed-out church. But only one side would be packed out. I would have no one sitting on my side of the aisle. No one but the ghosts of my dead family. I hadn't felt this alone since before I came to that first Gulf Coast paranormal meeting. I knew in my mind that this was not anyone's fault. There was no one to blame, no one to be angry with about it. It just felt wrong. Moving on with life, going on to be happy without Kylie or Dad or Mom. Yeah, it just felt wrong. Worried, anxious. Only now I knew that this feeling wasn't about me. This anxiety came from somewhere else, and I understood how my gift worked. Avoiding the spirits gave me serious anxiety, but I'd been doing that. Yet the glimpses, snapshots, and images continued to pop into my mind for weeks. When Midas and I were hurrying to make those decisions, I hadn't had the time to record any of them. No time to answer the call. Nothing except my procrastination. Might as well start. This was going to be a lengthy project, and I had a chunk of time to work with. Yes. Please. Listen. I could feel the tug deep down in my bones. It was like an irresistible siren's call. Oh, how I love to stand before a blank canvas and pour my heart out with paint. I had no choice, not if I wanted to be free from the uneasiness. Yes, that's how I felt. Uneasy. Like someone was determined to follow me around until I listened. She needed me to care. She'd reached out to others before, but they would not listen. I would. I was listening with all my heart. On purpose, I left my cell phone on the counter. It needed to charge anyway. I reached for the studio key and headed out the back door. Domino did not beg to follow me, and I accepted his decision without any attempts at persuading him otherwise. The grass had grown a few inches. I'd have to cut the yard sooner rather than later. I loved my studio and missed spending time here. I wondered if I would love the new house, the new studio, as much. I wasn't sure, but I couldn't worry about that. Yes, I would need pink and gray, and lots of black, too. I slid the key in the door and opened it. The smell of paint struck me. It was always a welcome aroma. Flicking on the lights, I chose a canvas and placed it on an open easel, not a large canvas. No, I wouldn't need that. This first painting would be relatively small, but important. Oh, so important. She needed to show me what she'd seen, what she knew. Like a woman in a dream, I mixed the paint. I stood before the canvas, and in a matter of seconds, began pulling the image out of my mind by way of my brush. The first thing I painted was the woman's eyes. They were full of fear. Dark brown with flecks of amber and fear. Loads of that, for sure. As I tuned into my subject, I saw more. I knew you'd come back, Magdalene. I knew you'd come back.
Chapter 3. Midas.
Well, thanks for coming, Midas. Well, I wasn't sure you got my message. The cell phone signal out here is hit or miss. It's especially worse after a storm, and we had quite the doozy last night. Please, come inside. Dad is awake and will be glad to see you. How long has it been?
John Gallagher had not changed a bit except for his hairline, which I noted with some amusement was scaling back. John had a head full of shockingly white blonde hair when we were teenagers. He'd always been proud of it. A bit too proud of it, actually. But that was so long ago. We lost contact for a while. John had endured intense personal tragedies, and rather than pulling closer to his old friends, he kind of stepped away. Not that I blamed him. I wasn't sure how I would make it without Cassidy. He had to be missing Ashley. They were such an item in high school. They were the couple everyone looked up to, including me. Even my mother liked John, and she wasn't one to be impressed with anyone. Ever. Too long, John. I don't even want to do the math on that, I said with a chuckle as I stepped into the familiar space. Off the top of my head, I would have guessed that it had been at least 20 years since I'd been inside the Gallagher residence. It was as if the place existed in some sort of time capsule, stuck in the late 90s, complete with original Lazy Boy recliners and a worn-out gray sectional. I could hear Mrs. Gallagher stirring in the kitchen, as she always liked to do when guests came over. The woman liked to bake and cook. As teenagers, we ate whatever she offered, whether that was chocolate chip cookies or pizza rolls. Besides the ease of stealing beer from Mr. Gallagher's shop refrigerator, Mrs. Gallagher's snacks and treats were a huge draw when we were teenagers. How many hours had we spent hanging around her kitchen table, the four of us? Not Mr. Gallagher, not very often, but always John, me, and a few other teenagers. "Mr. Gallagher, good to see you," I said to the old man who was kicked back in the recliner. I didn't see any evidence of his fall, but from what John told me, the event occurred a few weeks ago. He could very well be healed up from his accident. I was hoping that was the case. This family had seen its share of tragedy. Mr. Gallagher did appear frail, not the hardy semi-truck driver I once knew. He had certainly aged, as we all had. I didn't even want to think about that right now. Ha! Who was I to judge John about his hair pride? I was going through some sort of pre-midlife crisis of my own.
"Midas, how have you been, boy? John tells me you're about to get married. Is that true? Settling down after all these years. You took your time, didn't you?"
That last comment wasn't a question, more of an observation. I had seen Mr. Gallagher out and about a few times over the years, and he'd certainly met Sarah. He'd always ask the same question.
"When are you going to marry that girl?"
I didn't have the heart to tell him that the girl I was marrying now wasn't Sarah. Too much information. The three of us chit-chatted a bit until Mrs. Gallagher made her appearance. Surprisingly enough, she didn't appear with a tray of cookies or any sort of treat. She was a heavier, sadder version of herself, and that broke my heart. Mrs. Gallagher hugged my neck and excused herself politely, taking her keys and purse and leaving the three of us alone. This was the first time in a long time that I'd known Mrs. Gallagher to miss a chance to visit. I got the feeling she didn't approve of the conversation we were about to have. The best thing to do was to be patient and let John and Hugh take the lead.
"How much has John told you?"
Hugh asked suspiciously, as he put his recliner in the upright position. The old chair made loads of squeaking sounds before settling in place. That's when I noticed the bandages at the back of his head.
"He told me you had an accident on Highway 98, that you saw an apparition, that it frightened you and caused you to fall. That's all I know."
Hugh nodded as he closed his eyes for a moment.
"I'm a lucky man, Midas. Real lucky. That fall. It could have been worse. It's like it was all a dream. Yeah, like I was in some sort of hippy-dippy dream. Up until that moment, everything went right with that trip. Most of the trip was uneventful. I was on time. Things were going okay. And then I saw the woman.
She was gray, like a washed-out newspaper. Do you mind if I...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?